Good evening. Once again, greet you in the name of Christ. Sunday evening already. Beginning of the week looks like it'll be an eternity. And by the time we get to Sunday evening, you wonder where it really went. Well, it's behind us, so we move forward. Opportunity for anyone who wishes to recite the memory. I think, I'll confess to you, this is the first time I picked a memory passage for a week of meetings. I think I probably got too big of a chunk, didn't I? Anybody ready to say all the verses? Some of you made it through in two parts. Want to stitch them together? Anyone, say any part of it you wish. Very good, thank you. Anyone else? Now you set the standard too high. Nobody wants to say anything. I'm not going to wait much longer. Any volunteers before we move on? All right. Well, I would like to give you opportunity to share anything that the Lord's been working on your life. Anything that you want to share publicly with your brothers and sisters, I would like to give you a few moments to do that. So anybody want to share anything? Now is your opportunity.
It's really appreciated you guys this week. And I guess the Lord's been working on my life about an area that's been in my life. Because you hit on it this morning. Thank you for the courage to speak on it. I just long to be that submissive and sweet and radiant wife, support for you all the time, someone you can trust in. And I just really appreciate for your prayers with the congregation. I think that I can really be that.
God bless you. Thank you. Anyone else?
What is young? And I was thinking about that. What is my definition of enough when I compare it with God's definition of enough. And what difference is that going to make in the way I use my time, my resources, my money, whatever it is. Thank you for that.
Thank you. God bless you. God bless you. Anyone else?
I agree with Caleb that I have some work to do with my wife. Also, your message about sanctity of life and then the message this morning, you touched on the number of children that we have. So, we have seven, and I tend to think seven's a perfect number. Maybe I need to rethink that. Maybe the rest of you I didn't let me get.
God bless you for that. Being that open is a risk that you're going to run. You might just get some advice.
You can always ignore it, I guess.
You could. Appreciate that. It's a journey. Anyone else? Positive peer pressure. That's good. I think it's also known as accountability. Thank you for that.
I appreciated the message on the way it came. I mean, it was new thinking to me. Pain is so wrong. But maybe there's a little bit of pain in more of us than we think, or in me. Little things that if I'm kept in check or attend to them can grow. And I thought just a little thing like how far-reaching the consequences are of an action that may seem small or trite.
Mm-hmm.
It may be directional for someone.
God bless you. And that can have influences too, way beyond what we imagine. Thank you for that.
One of the things that stood out to me was you saying that God doesn't owe us a miracle. And I enjoyed that sermon about our perception of God. I want to see him for who he is and keep pursuing my relationship with him.
God bless you. Anyone else? Okay. Well, I think we'll just move on. The travail of preaching is coming to the end of a series and wondering, has everything been said that should be said. And I really, I don't know, maybe I'm just inexperienced, but it seems to be a big struggle for me to come to an end of a week like this and to know, so what would I want you all to remember about the week? If there would be something that could just encapsulate what I feel is the most important. And I'm afraid that a lot of the stuff I'm going to say is I've already said. But we're going to go to an Old Testament passage in Proverbs chapter 4. And if I could put into a couple of verses what I feel needs to happen in modern Christianity, it would probably come from these verses. And it's probably true for all eras of Christianity, probably not just modern Christianity. And I realize that when I use the word Christianity in an Old Testament context, that there might be some conflicts in your mind. But I also believe that these concepts at the end of Proverbs chapter 4 are in the New Testament. And I like them here because they're a really neat little package. And so it's been kind of a traditional thing, at least from where I come from, that the evangelist or the speaker will end up a series like this by talking about eternal destinies. And I actually shy away from that a little bit, not because I'm afraid of talking about eternity, but because I'm afraid that what we know about our eternal abodes probably come more from the songs we sing than the scriptures we read. The fact of the matter is, if you read your Bible, you will not find an awful lot about eternity. There's little hints that it's there. The fact that we can conceptualize it and even talk about it, I believe, indicates that it's a reality. I think we all know that some level that we will live beyond the existence that we know of. And so eternity is very important. But the Bible theme has more to do with God working with his people and the response of people to God. And to me, that is just the core of what Christianity and righteousness is all about. And one of the things that occurs to me is as we live life, we don't get that long of a time to prepare for eternity. Is it fair for God to only give us 70 to 80, maybe 100 years to prepare for an eternal existence? Is that fair? Well, I'm not prepared to debate that because it's just true. It's just the way it is. Life is short and it comes to an end very, very quickly. I'm pretty young in the relative scheme of things, but based on the Bible in Psalms, I'm almost half done. 3 score years and 10, right? If by reason of strength, you might get 80. Now, we know people live longer than that, but it's an interesting thing for me to think about, that I'm actually getting to the point where I'm probably half done. And it fills me with a sense of urgency about, you know, what am I about? What am I here for? What's the point of life? And so that tonight is probably the crux of what we're going to talk about. Proverbs chapter 4, I'm going to read verses 23 through 27. It's a very practical message, very simple, one that everybody can understand. Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. Put away from thee a froward mouth and perverse lips, put far from thee. Let thine eyes look right on, and let thine eyelids look straight before thee. Ponder the path of thy feet, and let all thy ways be established. Turn not to the right hand, nor to the left. Remove thy foot from evil. When I first studied this, I actually was going to just pull out one verse, verse 23, and talk about keeping our hearts with all diligence. But as I looked at these verses, it occurs to me that perhaps verses 24 through 27 are ways that we can know where our hearts are, and it provides keys to helping us keep our hearts. And I think that I'm right, and so that's how I'm going to approach this message. So what are the keys to keeping our heart? Well, I've rephrased them in ways that are hopefully more easily memorized. And so the first key that I see to keeping our hearts, and I'm just going to go over them and then I'll eventually expound on them as we go on. But I think the first one is to watch your mouth. The second one is stay focused. And the next one is watch where you're going. And the next one is stay on track. And I want to just look at each one of those. But backing up to the phrase, keep thy heart, a couple of thoughts that come from that phrase to me is that we remember what this verse says, keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it, out of our heart, are the issues of life. Or another way we could perhaps say that, out of it, the life issues. Jesus actually reinforces that in the New Testament when he says, in Matthew 15, 8 through 18 through 20, that out of the heart proceeds evil thoughts, murders, adulteries. And it follows when we read also that by their fruit you will know them, that there's good trees that bring forth good fruit and corrupt trees that bring forth corrupt fruit. And so Jesus expounds on that theme all through his teachings, that our inner life, the part of us that we don't see, will work its way out in things that we do see. And the way you know a person is by the things that issue out of their life. And it can be for good or it can be for bad. It all has to do with some of the things we're going to talk about this evening. So that's the first thing that I want to point out about this, that our life issues out of our hearts. And I think that you all understand when it talks about a heart, we're not talking about the actual muscle that pumps blood. We're talking about the inner life of a person, the spirit of a person, the will, the emotion, the not really the emotions, but the real person. That it's how you know the person. It's who that person is. The word keep to me has the idea of watching it or guarding it or nurturing it. We talk about keeping animals, right? We take care of them. We keep them. We keep plants sometimes, and we take care of them. We talk about keeping house. It's just the idea of maintaining it, making sure that all is functioning as it should. It also has the idea of guarding it. When we keep something, we sometimes mean that we're keeping it safe, that we're keeping it away from anything harmful. The word thy indicates something to me, that it is a personal thing. In other words, I can't really keep your heart and you can't really keep mine. It's something I have to do for myself between me and my God. And it's not, I can ask for help, I can ask for some advice, but I can't expect you to be responsible for my heart. And you can't expect me to really be responsible for yours at the end of the day. You understand that. There's a certain amount of that with children and all. But adults, people old enough to understand their standing with God, really have that responsibility laid on them. What is a little bit scary is that if you are called to some leadership, if you're a father, you're a pastor or something, the Bible does seem to indicate that people under your care, you will in some way have to give some account for that. And that's a very sobering thought. But that's not our subject tonight. But the proverb says it's we keep our hearts for ourselves. It's not something anybody can do. The other thing that you'll notice in this verse, verse 23, it talks about keeping our hearts with all diligence. This indicates that this is not something that happens accidentally. When we are diligent about something, it means that we are purposeful about it. We know exactly what we're doing when we're diligent. We understand what needs to be done, and we do it. And it carries the idea of a job that requires full awareness and full purpose. It isn't going to just happen. So, now, looking at the rest of these verses as keys to keeping our hearts, I believe they tie together. So the Proverbs say we are to keep our hearts. How do we do this? How are we supposed to keep our hearts? Well, I told you, first one, verse 24, keep or watch your mouth. Put away from thee a froward mouth, a mouth that speaks things that are out of place, perverse lips put far from thee. How often have you heard or have you actually said, I said that without thinking? Now analyze that statement and you know immediately that it's not true. At some level, somewhere along the way, you process that thought. You may not have done it intentionally. Sometimes we are in a conversation with someone and something comes to our minds and we say it without really thinking about all the implications. And I think that's what we mean when we say, I said that without thinking. But it actually isn't true. Every thought that comes out of our mouths in the form of words has been processed in the brain sometime along the way. So if we're trying to understand something about our hearts, we need to watch our mouths. We need to ask ourselves. We need to listen to ourselves. We need to hear what we're saying. And when we hear things that keep recurring and they're negative, then there's something wrong deeper. It's not our mouths that's the problem. It's not the people we're dealing with that's the problem. There's something deeper inside that is bringing these things out. And so one way to help us keep our hearts with diligence is to watch our mouths. What are we saying? How are we saying it? Why did I say it that way? Why did I say that about that person? What impression am I trying to leave to this person by the words I use? Jesus reinforces this idea in the New Testament when he says, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. And so when we follow a person around and we learn to know them well and they use words, which is everybody does, we learn to know something about that person's heart, and we can learn to know our own hearts by listening to our own words. The things that continually pour forth from our mouths indicate what the abundance of our heart is. And it's very inconvenient truth. It's not nice to think about that because I want to just say what I want to say. I don't want to worry about the source of it, right? Well, Jesus and Proverbs teach us this is not the case. So when we find ourselves in a pattern of speech that is not righteous, that is not going to lead us in a good way, we need to get to the heart of the issue. We need to get deeper than just the words that are coming out of our mouths. The second thing that we learn in verse 25 that help us to keep our hearts is to keep focused. He says it this way, let thine eyes look right on and let thine eyelids look straight before thee. Have you ever sat and watched people when you have time to do this? Airports, when you're waiting for a flight, or doctor's office, or someplace where there's people, and you have the chance to just sit and watch. I love doing this. It's a lot of fun. It's even more fun than a smartphone sometimes. But it's very easy to tell whether a person has a purpose or not. Very easy. You just watch them. If you're in an airport, for instance, you know whether they're trying to make a flight or whether they're just loafing around until the flight is ready to leave. And I don't even know how to explain what all I look at when I see that, but I think you understand what I mean. Usually a person with a purpose, maybe a good example of this would be watching someone come into a supermarket where they walk straight to the aisle where their item is, they pick it off the shelf, and they walk straight to the cash register, and they're out of there, versus someone who they don't really know what they want. They just know they need some stuff at the store. And so they kind of mosey around. You can just see the difference in purpose. Jesus says, no man putting his hand to the plow and looking back is fit for the kingdom of God. And I think this is the point that the Proverbs are trying to make here. That when we set goals, we stay focused on them. And in life, we need to stay focused because life really matters. If we believe that there's something bigger going on than just existing, that we are actually put here for 70 years, to use the biblical number, to prepare for an eternal existence, either with God or away from God, then life really matters. Every second really needs to count. And if it doesn't count, it's a wasted moment. And so we need to stay focused. I believe all of us here believe that we are here for more than fun and games. Life is as much about the spiritual aspect as it is about the physical. In fact, I think we should care even a little more about our spiritual aspect than our physical aspect. And so when we read this, we learn that our eyes need to be focused. Peripheral things such as pleasure and entertainment and popularity and wealth and possessions and the acquisition of all of this is going to cause us to creep away from the mission of staying focused. We're going to be like the person trying to plow straight and looking all around. And it isn't going to work. It's not going to be straight when we're all done. And so when we're in this process of keeping our hearts with all diligence, look at our focus. And if we find our vision moving away from the things of God and away from His kingdom, we need to ask ourselves why. These things don't happen overnight. And usually we wake up to the fact that we have drifted several weeks into the drift. It can be something just as simple as you didn't pray today. You didn't read your Bible today. Well, guess what? Then a day becomes a week, and then a week becomes a month. And suddenly we find ourselves growing cold toward God and cold toward our brethren and sisters, and we're like, why? What's going on here? Well, we've lost our focus. Our furrow is all of a sudden veering off into some direction that we never intended for it to go. And so to keep our hearts, we must keep focused. And to ask ourselves questions, to sit down and purposefully think about it. Remember, it's a diligent thing to keep our hearts. And so we just ask ourselves questions. Why is it? Well, you know what I told you about contentment, so I'll just make this really personal. So I recently had to sit down and say, well, why am I so much more concerned about making money than I did before? Is that in any connection to why I'm struggling in some spiritual things? Is there a connection there? Now, actually, there is. I don't like to admit that, but there is. And we need to remember when we sit down and ask ourselves questions like that, to remember that what took us there was a misguided affection. Our hearts are going after something different than they used to. And so when we find ourselves growing cold, are we still looking, keeping focused? Are we still heading where we want to be? Verse 26 kind of has the same idea, but slightly different. And I term this key to watch where you're going. This is similar, but it's not the same. The first point, or the verse 25, where it talks about looking right on, has the idea to me of the focus, the goal. And pondering the path of our feet has more of the idea of the choices that we're going to make to get to the goal. So in life, so we want to end up right. We want to get to where we know we're at peace, that when we die, we will be with the Lord. So how are we going to get there? How are we going to get there? Again, these things are not going to happen by accident. If we just live life the way it comes and we don't take purposeful decisions about where we're going to go, our hearts are going to take us all over the place. One day we'll feel good about where we're headed, and the next day we won't, so we're going to change course, we're going to try this, we're going to try that, and we end up far from the goal. Jesus says that we are to count the cost of following Him, and I think that's what's happening here. We ponder the path of our feet. We think about every decision. Now, some decisions don't seem like such a big deal. Is it really a big deal whether we eat chocolate ice cream or vanilla ice cream? Maybe not. But maybe the real question is, should you eat ice cream? And I'm not actually saying you shouldn't eat ice cream. I'm just saying that when we purposefully ponder the path of our feet, suddenly little choices amount to big choices. And so when we make decisions, when we live our lives, we need to remember that the goal is making it all the way through and being with the Lord in the end. And then we need to look at every choice as a means to that goal or a means away from that goal. I think it's Paul. In one of his epistles, I think it's Paul, that talks about growing in grace and in the knowledge. Maybe that's Peter, I can't remember. But one of the questions that we can ask ourselves about watching where we're going to try to keep our hearts, we can ask ourselves, am I growing in grace and in the knowledge of Jesus Christ? If I'm not, I'm on the wrong path. Plain and simple. If I'm not gaining ground in my relationship with Jesus Christ, it's time to look at our path, to watch where we're going. Another question that comes to my mind whenever I think of pondering the path of our feet is, will I be rebelling against authority if I pursue this course? I know authority is a hateful word coming across the pulpit. I know that. But the fact is, God has put authorities into our lives. Every single one of us here today has authority in our lives. And if we want to end up right, and we go against godly authority in our life, I don't think I can offer you a lot of hope that you will end up at the right place. What if my authority isn't godly? Well, I'm assuming that most likely it is. But any God-ordained authority, even, unless it's clearly against God's word, and I say clearly with great emphasis, it's a dangerous place to begin thinking that my path is going to cross with what godly authority is speaking into my life. Teenagers try it with their parents. School children try it with their teachers. It goes down the list. So watch where you're going, because where we're going indicates something about our hearts. And if we want to keep our hearts safe, we're going to make purposeful decisions to end up right. The last key is found in verse 27. And I labeled this one, stay on track. Turn not to the right hand nor to the left. Remove thy foot from evil. Sometimes it seems as if once we make a decision, we've set the plow, we've decided that our goal is indeed to spend eternity with Jesus Christ and to make it all the way through. We've been trying to ponder the path as best we can, and we meet some difficulties. But we know that all of those things are right. The tendency sometimes is to second guess ourselves. And I think it all goes back sometimes to the way we look at God. Somehow we think that if we have all the right goals and we're doing all the right things, then God owes us an easy road. And that devotion tonight is so true. The harder you press toward God, the more opposition there actually is in the physical and in the sense of opposition from the devil and his kingdom. And so I think this wraps up very neatly what Solomon was writing when he says, keep your heart, do these things, and in order to keep your heart safe, just remember, don't waver from the goal. He's just going back over that whole thing and saying, keep the goal. Stay on track and just keep on doing it. Don't get into evil. Don't lose the vision. Just keep going, because it has to be important. If we believe it's important, it is important, of course. And we're dealing with the outcome of our spiritual being. Where will it be in the end? I would like to give you some observations that I have on why, just some observations about keeping our hearts. it's kind of just a collection of things that occurred to me as I studied. You know, why is it that we need this admonition? One reason, I believe, is that life seems longer than it is. It's very short, but it's not very short. Because when we're in the middle of keeping our hearts, the battle does seem to drag, doesn't it? It doesn't seem like it's worth all that effort. Does it really matter if I say some of these words? Does it really matter if I don't ponder every decision? Does it really matter if I get sidetracked once in a while? Is it okay? See, life has a way of wearing us down. We do have physical responsibilities. And life can just be wearing. And it feels as if this is all there is. That this physical life is all there is. And so we have to make it the best that we can. And we forget about the spiritual side of it. And remember, if there's anything that's going to have to be sacrificed, it has to be the physical, right? We can't sacrifice on the spiritual side. But because life can get this way, sometimes the battle of keeping our hearts with all diligence gets very tiring. And I think this is why some people give up. It's too much work. I just want to go have my fun. I just want to have it easier. Does it really have to be this hard? Surely God doesn't mean this. And so we have all of these teachings out there about free grace and all of those things that sound so good because it gives us both. We can have both. So why not? Another thing that can happen sometimes is that it seems as if nobody else cares about it. And this can really wear us down, especially in the context of church, brotherhood, when it seems as if there's something God has led you to and it seems so important, and it seems like nobody else cares. You know, it really is better to come to church on every evening when everybody else does, like Brother Nathan talked about. There is something about the collective thing that makes it easier. I struggled briefly with the idea of preaching on brotherhood tonight, and I just felt like I couldn't do the subject justice, and there was things that I was still processing. But in my processing, I thought of this. You know, this whole thing of church, as messy as it can get, just take it out of your life and imagine what would happen. Just try it. No, don't. Actually, don't. But but imagine. Just watch what people do when they don't have people that care. Their lives are a wreck. And you feel really bad for them. And unfortunately, sometimes in our spiritual journeys, we come to a truth, we come to a conviction, we come to something that nobody else really seems to care about. Well, guess what? Keep thy heart. I don't know what else to say. But again, I would caution about these convictions that lead us against what I'm referring to is more of maybe of a level of conscientiousness that other people don't seem to see as important. Maybe I'll illustrate that for you so you know exactly what I'm talking about. I overheard a conversation between two brethren about taking vehicles to an auction just to dump them. And the one had a truck that had his transmission that slipped, and he was talking about how glad he was just to get it to the auction and dump it. And he didn't feel the need to tell anybody about this transmission slipping. Well, I personally couldn't do that. I don't care what the auction company does with it, but when I take it to the auction company, I'm going to tell them the transmission slips. Well, his process was, of the way he thought through it, was, well, that's what auctions are for. You expect to pick up stuff with problems at an auction. Well, that's a perspective. I still feel that to keep my conscience clean, I would have to tell them, you know what, this truck has a problem. That's why it's here. Okay, so that's what I'm illustrating. And it kind of bothered me a little bit. It's like, well, why don't these men care? Well, you know what? they probably have areas in their life where they're like, Lyndon, you mean you don't care about that? Surely you can't even be a Christian and do that. You see what I'm saying? So sometimes we find ourselves in a situation where our conscience, where we feel that nobody else cares. Well, just do what's right for you, okay? In that situation. Another thing that I've observed about keeping our hearts is that it becomes difficult because there are just so many distractions. There are so many things that life will fill up with. And again, I go back to this thing that this keeping of our hearts has to be an intentional thing. We actually have to plan to do it. Otherwise, there will be plenty of other things to take your attention. You all know this. It's just the way life is. And so let's weed out as many distractions as we can. If we know that there are certain things that will distract us, maybe, oh, for instance, another personal little thing of mine. I don't mean to brag. It's just I don't know what else to use other than my personal experiences. But I've made a decision that I will not have an internet browser on my phone. It's just a distraction I don't need. I just don't need it. I know men that do, and it's fine. They apparently are okay with it. It doesn't keep me from feeling that it's something that I can do without. And so again, I just use that as a personal example. You can take it and apply it however you want to. I'm not saying that you have to do it exactly like I do. One last observation that I would like to make about keeping our hearts is that as parents, we need to teach, we need to help our children learn how to keep their hearts. This isn't something that we really are born knowing how to do. And I believe that's really the whole point of child training and teaching, is to teach them to see the consequences of just letting their hearts go. And somehow they need to understand as they age. Now, I'm really going into the idealistic because I can't prove that everything that I say is, I can't say that I've worked it out, personal experience necessarily. But it seems to me that they need to transition throughout life. I don't even know what age to put on it, but eventually they're going to have to switch from you telling them this is coming out of their hearts and they need to keep it in line to understanding how to do that themselves. We call it moving from external discipline to internal discipline. And one of the greatest gifts, besides teaching your children to cheerfully accept reproof, one of the other greatest gifts we can give our children is the ability to control themselves. And it's a goal that I have. But they need help to do this. We really preach to young people about, you know, keep your heart, keep your heart. Well, have we shown them how? Have we given them the tools to know how to do this? Well, it's a life and death situation. I think when we pull back all the stuff that surrounds life and we just look at the black and white, it isn't really that hard to understand. It isn't really that hard to understand. It's just pretty hard to live. It's just really, really difficult. I want to close with one verse from Hebrews 12. Actually, two verses. I want to get the whole sentence. Hebrews 12, verses 1 and 2. Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. See, we actually have examples. We have people surrounding us who care. Some of them seems to indicate that there's people that have gone before, people of faith, and it comes right after Hebrews 11, all those people that they knew what it was to just stay the course, keep on track. Every decision they made was because of something they believed about the end. And that's exactly what Jesus did as well. He knew what he wanted in the end, and therefore he stayed on track. What if, just what if at some point, Jesus would have said, I can't take it anymore. That would be terrible. And you know, we're not Jesus. And so if we give up, it won't be quite that catastrophic in the sense of the whole world being unsaved. But it is a big deal whether we make it through or not. And I want to leave you with that. I also wanted to tell you all, thank you very much for all the things you have done for our family. We have had plenty of food, and we appreciate that. It was easy because there were so many options for breakfast and lunch. We just went down there and looked around and decided what looked good, and we really appreciate that. And I just want to bless y'all here in serving the Lord in this community. Just stay on track. It's a life or death situation. And if you ever get a chance to come to Mississippi, please do. We would be delighted to show you some real Southern hospitality. It's pretty warm. I'll warn you of that. I'm going to turn the time back over to the ministry.